Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:12 p.m. that is Central Time. Today is November 1st. Well, there was a lot of action going on today. It started off in the morning with this speculation from an anonymous social media post in China that the government was considering removing the COVID zero policy. So assets related to China jumped. And look at the Hang Seng China Enterprises Index. So it was up in a reasonably dynamic manner, about 5%. Now, this isn't a dynamic on the scale of what we've seen in the past. So let's just look back at March. There was this significant rally, 6,000 to 7,000 is a big move. And then we had another big one back in March of 2020. Now, everything went up on that occasion. But this is a log scale chart, so let's just put it on an arithmetic scale, just to put into perspective. So we're at the psychological 5,000 level. It has not yet broken the sequence of lower rally highs. If we were to see follow through tomorrow, then that would begin to suggest more than short term, short covering. But then let's just think about the speculation. The first thing is that then the foreign ministry, or at least people related to the foreign ministry, came out and said that they didn't know of any such plan. Then let's just consider for a moment. China has already got uncontrollable outbreaks of COVID, and there's talk about increasing numbers of lockdowns, and there's lots of people are ticked off. And not without reason. I mean, we all know what it's like to have been locked down and for it to last for an interminable amount of time. And China's getting that now. We have to remember that China wasn't getting the lockdowns for most of 2020 or 2021 because they didn't have COVID. But the reality is now they do. And the newer versions, they might not be as deadly, but they are much more transmissible. So, 10% of the population in 2013 had diabetes, with 35% of the population with pre-diabetes. Now, that would imply that 10 years later, perhaps a quarter of the population have some form of diabetes. And we know that elderly and, well, older people, overweight people, people with pre-existing conditions, and immunocompromised people are those that are most at risk from the coronavirus. Well, that's a quarter of the population in China, and that's 250 million people. So this speculation that they're suddenly going to abandon COVID controls, that seems to be, I think, rather far-fetched. Now, will they progressively ease up? Perhaps. But then the question is, what would happen if the death rate started going up? Are they going to then lock down even harder? And are they in a position to try and mitigate those kinds of risks? Because the medical sector in China is still relatively underdeveloped, and particularly so in the hinterland. One of the primary reasons why people want to move to the city in the first place, and why people are so eager to buy a house in the city, is so that they could have the opportunity to change their hukou, so that then they become a city resident and have access to city medical facilities for when they get older. So that's why moving to the city for many people is considered a retirement project. But that's also representative of just how underdeveloped medical facilities are in the hinterland. So I think that it is rather unlikely that China's going to give up on COVID zero. Now, they might ease up on it at some point, but I don't think we're there right now, and not least as the number of cases continues to go up. Eventually, when it becomes an intractable issue, then they might just have to admit defeat. But that's going to come with some significant political risk, because we're talking about a party that prides itself on always being right. So therefore, admitting defeat isn't something that's going to come easily. I also think that if this were real news, we would see upside follow-through tomorrow on the renminbi. So the renminbi was a little bit steadier in here today, but again, not nearly as in dynamic a fashion as we had just last week. Now let's look at other markets in the region. India was up in a reasonably firm manner, up another 133 and up through the 18,000 level now. So we're looking at a new recovery high and potentially now completing what has been a year-long range and very good evidence of support in the region of the 200-day moving average. Well, with enthusiasm about China, then industrial resources were also on the front foot, and copper prices were up 10 cents. So we're also getting interest, or at least evidence of interest, in the industrial metal miners. So there's speculation that Vale is shopping around for a buyer for 10% of its nickel and copper resources. And some of the large institutional and sovereign wealth funds are kicking the tires. So they're looking to raise about 2 billion, and the share is starting to steady here. The reality is that there's not nowhere near enough of industrial resource production to meet the climate goals or the decarbonization goals of or at least the stated goals of politicians. So it makes sense then for institutional investors to look at some of the existing resources and to take a piece of those. It helps to tick some of the boxes that they have for complying with these green ambitions and basically saying they've done what they can. When we hear statistics like the quantity of copper mined per annum will have to double in order to meet the long-term targets of decarbonization, well, one does have to just ask the question, where are the new mines going to come from? So it does lend, I think, an increased premium to the kinds of mines that are already in existence. And there's quite a lot of commonality between Rio Tinto and Vale, as it is also firming from the lower side of what's close to a 2-year range. And BHP has probably more in the way of energy assets, so it has outperformed and it's firming from the lower side of a year-long range. Well, Glencore is more of a commodity trader, so it is outperforming and it's pushing on the upside in here. And not least, it's also got a significant trading position in wheat. And wheat is a commodity that is very much susceptible to the war in Ukraine. So it's following through on the upside in here today, following the threat from Russia that shipping lanes are not going to be safe. Now let's think about what's going on in the UK. Well, the Bank of England has started selling some of its bonds. So they've found a willing market for 750 million of those bonds. But then we should just pay attention to the longer term phenomena, which is generally after quantitative tightening begins, yields rise because there's excessive supply in the market. Now, the UK government is still running significant deficits, and the market is waiting on the answer really from politicians how they're going to contract those deficits. But if the supply of bonds increases because of additional borrowing and central bank selling, then in the initial phases, yields tend to rise, And then subsequently, people are worried less about the supply issue and more about deflation. And in that case, then yields compress. So yields have compressed over the course of the last month in reaction to quantitative easing. And then it's going to be a very fine balance for the Bank of England in how easily they can get rid of all the bonds that are sitting on their balance sheet. Now, I will find the ticker for the quantity of debt that they have on their balance sheet. But we can then also pay attention to what's happening with the pound. So it's right now in the region of the 115 area, and it has broken the sequence of lower rally highs and partially unwound the large overextension relative to the 200-day moving average. Then it's going to be, I think, a Herculean effort for the pound to get through the 120 area, because we're looking at the potential for recessions. We're looking at the clear difficulty of the government to control spending. Then, one thing that's been, I think, underappreciated is just how difficult it is for central banks to stop inflating their balance sheets. So, we've seen in the past where the Bank of England has never really succeeded in bringing the size of the balance sheet below the 200-day moving average. There have been brief occasions when it's tried. And usually, by the time the balance sheet runoff has lasted long enough to then unwind the overextension relative to the 1,000-day moving average, well, then that has been the point at which we get another big surge on the upside. So I don't think it's going to be lost on investors that there's something like a 3 to 4 year cycle. And the other asset that's got a 3 to 4 year cycle is Bitcoin, where there's a halving event every 4 years. And every one of those halving events has occurred just before there's been this massive swell of new liquidity into the market. So we're at a rather difficult point now for the Bank of England, because they're just starting to reduce the size of their balance sheet. And if they continue with this pace, then they're going to start taking it down pretty quickly. So we're up at a trillion right now, or darn close to a trillion. And 750 million is about 1%, or perhaps a little bit more than 1%. So, if they were to sell, for example, less than 1%, or give or take 1% a week or a month, then it would take a while to get down to 800 billion. It might take just long enough to create enough stress in the economy that the next bout of money printing would probably coincide with renewed interest in additional new speculative activity. So Bitcoin prices are still hovering here around the 20,000 level, and you can see that it does have these massive moves on the upside following at the occasional bouts of liquidity injection. So we had fiscal stimulus in 2017, then we had this massive swell of new money in 2020. If we go back even further, well, we had lots of quantitative easing in 2013. So these are the kinds of asset price appreciation events that correspond with massive money printing. And now we're in a different scenario where central banks are trying to unwind all of this additional stimulus, even though they've never succeeded in doing it in the past, because inflationary pressures continue to rise. Now we're going to hear from the Federal Reserve tomorrow, and they're going to make a decision about not only whether they're going to raise rates by an additional 75 basis points, but they're going to give at least some indication of how much further they're going to raise rates subsequently. There is a lot of speculation among investors that there's going to be a sharp pivot, that they're going to signal soon that they're going to moderate the pace of interest rate hikes, that we'll soon be able to see when they'll pause, and subsequently, then they will have to start cutting interest rates. That will reignite interest in the growth element of the market, just like it has on every other occasion since 2008, and we'll go back to a normal market environment. And what that seems to me to be is a lot of wishful thinking. And the challenge right now is that inflationary pressures are embedded, and that consumer spending is too high, and they're going to have to see unemployment rise before they'll stop. So that implies deflation, and it implies less consumer spending. So Amazon's breaking on the downside. So this suggests to me that investors are willing to bet that there will be less consumer spending, that there is going to be a recession, and that ultimately we're going to see a different set of investing opportunities, not the same. We're not going to see Amazon go from about $1 to $200. We're not going to have that exact same return in the next decade. It could be, in fact, that we see lengthy ranging and a difficult time for these mega cap shares achieving or sustaining their growth. And when we look at the relative performance of the Fang Man plus Tesla grouping, then it has now broken below the 1,000-day moving average. So the relative performance of this group of companies is over. And that's the end of this phenomenal bull run for mega cap shares. Growth with no interest rate to jump hurdle to jump over isn't something that we're going to have the opportunity for in future. Value is likely to be more of the trendsetter. Companies that have reliable cash flows, not promises of cash flows, but cash flows now. Those that have long records of increasing their dividends will become more attractive when those dividends get back to a competitive position. And I think investors will start prizing those dividends more than share buybacks, even when they do come with taxation. But of course, that taxation, is a lot lower if you're a longer term holder. So we're definitely going to get more of a transition in the market. There's going to be different sectors do well. And when we think about value relative to growth, then they're clearly outperforming now. So we have a first step above the base, and it's back above the secular trend mean. So value is outperforming in no uncertain terms. I do think that the dividend aristocrats are susceptible to some additional contraction in order to push up their yields. But certainly the outperformance we've had from the sector is notable, and it is now in the region of the 200-day moving average. And it wouldn't be that surprising to see some pause and consolidation here. This is very similar to what we have with the Dow Jones. Now, to the extent that investors were willing to bet that the Fed was going to ride to the rescue, we had the buy the dip phenomena. And now, when it's more likely that the Fed will look at any asset price appreciation phenomenon as a threat to their effort to try and control inflation would probably more have a Fed call or a sell the rally kind of environment. So the Dow Jones is back in the region of the 200-day moving average, and I think susceptible to additional weakness in here soon, and potentially following the Fed meeting tomorrow. The Nasdaq is back in the region of the 1,000-day moving average and beginning to experience some resistance. I'm bearish of Apple. I feel like I'm a broken record, but it's a highly cyclical sector. And they're not going to be able to produce as many phones as they would like because people are deserting their factory because they don't want to get locked down. And then with interest rates rising, well, interest rates have gone up so quickly that it hasn't become apparent in terms of consumer demand statistics yet. But lots of consumer companies are not trending higher. So we've already seen Walmart and excuse me, we've already seen Amazon, and Walmart is looking overbought in the short term, and this looks like a period of right-hand extension following the type 2 massive reaction against the prevailing trend. And that would suggest that the next surprise will be on the downside. When we think then about Kroger, it's a big supermarket chain in the USA, and rebounded rather impressively for 2 weeks and is at now the first area of potential resistance. Now, it doesn't mean that we're going to have all bad news. So Ocado announced in here today that they've got a new customer. So they're going to start providing some of their supply chain technology to a Korean supermarket chain. Now, the share is down from 3,000 to 500, with a little bit of leeway on either side of those numbers. And it was up in a dynamic manner in here today. Well, that suggests a low of at least near-term significance. And it's back at the upper side of the underlying range. So what it suggests, at least, is that we're coming back into a potential area of support and potentially the beginning of a base formation. But it does give an example that automation becomes much more compelling when wages rise and interest rates are high because it helps to drive down costs. And the cost of those robots can be amortized over time, particularly as interest rates continue to push higher. I don't think that interest rates are going to go up indefinitely. In fact, I don't even think that it matters how high interest rates go on this occasion. The much more pressing question is how low do interest rates fall when they do start cutting them? Are we ever going to get back to the 0 to 25 basis point hurdle? Instead, perhaps, are they going to go back down to 2%? And will they then rise faster subsequently? Because that would be a higher reaction low. That would really suggest then that we are in a new market environment. There's still argument about it. There's still a willingness to jump in and try and support these growthy kind of assets. Because there's the assumption that central banks will always ride to the rescue. And that is not going to be disabused until after the next recession. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.